for the speaker. He had a place to get out of the rain. That was enough. Maybe that was more than he had had back in the swamp. He did share with a troop of descendants who stopped bickering only when the outsider came around. And then the children restrained themselves only for a while. On successive afternoons, Kidam summoned me to consult on trivial matters. We faced each other over tea, served by the beautiful granddaughter, while the children quickly lost their awe of me and resumed brawling. We traded information on friends and enemies. That fevered character in the shadows moaned and groaned. I did not like that. He was dying. But he was taking a long, long time getting it done. Every time he cried out, the beautiful one went to him. I ached in sympathy. She was so haggard. Second visit, I said something to indicate sympathy. One of those things you toss off without much thought. Kidam's wife, whom I now knew to be named Hong Tre, glanced up from her tea, startled. She said three soft words to Kidam. The old man nodded. Thank you for your concern, Stone Soldier, but it is misplaced. Dan welcomed a devil into his soul. Now he pays the due. A burst of rapid liquid Nguyen Bao erupted from the shadows. A squat old woman waddled into the light. She was bow-legged, ugly as a warthog, in a vicious humor. She barked at me. She was Ki Gota, the speaker's daughter and my Shadow Tai Day's mother. She was a dark legend among her own people. I have no idea what she was on about, but I got the feeling that she laid all the ills of the world squarely at my feet. Kidam said something gently. It did not get through. Hong Tre repeated his words more gently, in a whisper. Silence fell instantly. Ki Gota scurried into the shadows. The speaker offered, In all our lives we enjoy successes and failures. My great sorrow is my daughter Gota. She has within her a cancer of agony she cannot conquer. She insists on sharing it with the rest of us. A tiny smile touched his lips. This was self-deprecating humor, meant to inform me that he was speaking metaphorically. Ha! Great failure! The wellspring of heartbreak for all of us was her hasty choice of Sam Dan Kyu as the husband for her daughter. He indicated the beautiful flower. The flower betrayed a blush as she knelt to refill our cups. There was no doubt that all these people understood Taglian perfectly. Kidam added, That is the one great error that Gota cannot deny, a culmination of deficiencies that is like a brand. She was widowed young. She arranged the marriage, hoping to enjoy her elder years, luxuriating on the wealth of the Sams. The speaker showed me that little smile again, probably sensing my incredulity. Wealth and Yuang Bao are contradictory concepts. The old man continued. Dan was clever. He concealed the fact that he had been disinherited because of his cruelty and wickedness and treachery. Gota was too much in a hurry to investigate harsh rumors, and Dan's evil only grew worse after the nuptials. But that is enough about me and mine. I asked you here because I wish to keep an eye on the character of the leader of the Bone Warriors. I had to ask, Why do you call us that? Does it mean anything? Kidam traded looks with his wife. I sighed. I get it. It's more of the Black Company claptrap everybody does. You think we're something our predecessors were supposed to have been 400 years ago. Only probably weren't because oral history exaggerates ridiculously. Speaker, listen. The Black Company is just a gang of outcasts. Really. We're plain old mercenary soldiers caught up in circumstances we don't understand and really don't like. We're just passing through. We came this way because our captain has a bug up his ass about the company's history. Most of the rest of us couldn't think of anything else. We wanted to do more. I told him about Silent and Darling and others who had parted with the Brotherhood rather than hazard the long journey south. I promise you, whatever scares everybody, and I wish somebody would tell me what that is, it would have to involve way more work than I'm willing to put into anything. The old man eyed me, glanced at his wife. She said and did nothing, but something passed between them. Kidam nodded. Uncle Doge materialized. The speaker told me, "Perhaps we misjudge you. Even I allow prejudice to guide me at times. There is a chance I will know better when next we speak." Uncle Doge made a small gesture. "Time for me to leave." Chapter 44. Goblin caught me hitting the Jaikuri books.
"Murrigan!"
I started.
"Huh?" "About goddamn time."
"What? What are you talking about?"
"I've been standing here watching you for 10 minutes. You never turned a page. You never blinked an eye. I couldn't tell if you was breathing."
I started to make an excuse.
"Won't sell. I had to yell 4 times and slap you on the back of the head to get your attention."
So I was thinking. Only I could not recall even one thought.
"Yeah, right. Mogaba wants your scrawny ass over to the Citadel."
A lot of Southerners have sneaked off to meet this relief column. I told Mogaba. At first I thought they were trying to trick us, pull back and hit us when we tried to take advantage. But Goblin and One Eye promised me they've just kept going. There can't be a relief army, though. Where would the soldiers come from? Who would lead them? Would Mogaba believe that I had not heard the more interesting rumors? He heard more than I did. And Croker Survival probably figured in a lot of those. What would he do if the old man turned up alive? I was pretty sure Mogaba thought about that a lot. I was thanked and told to return to my people with no other comment. I did not find out why he sent for me. Mogaba did just what I feared. He launched a recon in force, maybe trying to find new weak spots. He employed only his own most trustworthy men. And I was content to sit atop my part of the wall watching, and wondering why Mogaba was so sure we would desert if we got outside. I tend to ignore Mogaba here. He was a much greater part of everyday life than I show. He was misery on the hoof. My dislike makes it impossible to write about the man rationally, so I discuss him only when I must. Of all the Nar in those days, only Sindawe ever made the effort to be civil. Anyway, Mogaba thought he had a chance to hurt the Shadow Master, but the planners outside were getting the hang of how his head worked. He did not let a lack of success discourage him. There was that about Mugabe. He never became discouraged. No setback ever shook his conviction that he was invincible. If his plans fizzled, he just recalculated. Mugabe's soldiers began to desert without benefit of escape from the city, coming to hide out with friends among Artaglians. They complained that Mugabe was too profligate with soldiers' lives. Mugabe responded by ordering special rations and preferential access to prostitutes for his most dedicated men. We found those sealed jars of grain left over from the Shadow Master's first siege. Whether to share generated considerable debate. One eye insisted that Mugabe would not be satisfied just to share. He would want to know all about our find. He would want to see for himself. Did we want him wandering around our warrens? No. So what does the little shit do? He turns right around and starts selling fresh baked shit do. He turns right around and starts selling fresh baked bread for 20 times what a loaf cost before the siege. I found a nice quiet spot for just one eye and me, atop the wall on a lazy afternoon. There were fresh rumors of a battle up north, but that was not our topic. I asked, "What did you tell me about why we shouldn't let Mugabe share the stores we found?" "Huh?" This was not the hassle he expected. "You were extremely persuasive. All that stuff about not letting the man get into our hideout." He grinned, proud of himself. "So? You stand by what you said?" "Sure." "Then what the fuck are you doing selling his men bread when we're not supposed to have no grain to grind for flour?" He frowned. The connection eluded him. "Making a profit? You really figure Mugabe is so stupid he won't notice that bread? You really figure he won't ask questions?" "You got too rigid a way of looking at things, kid." "You keep up your crap. You're really going to think rigid. You get me killed, I'm going to haunt your ass forever." "You probably would. There's times I think you're halfway a haunt already." "What's that supposed to mean?" "The spells you have. When you have them, it's like there's somebody else looking out from behind your eyes. It's like there's some other soul swirling around you." I never noticed. Would I notice? "If we had us a skilled necromancer or a spirit talker, we might be surprised what we found." "You wasn't born twins, was you?" His stare was fierce. A chill stalked my spine. The hairs on my neck stirred. I did feel spooky sometimes. But he was just trying to change the subject. Goblin joined us uninvited.
"There's something going on with the Shadowlanders, Mergen."
A crow nearby made a sound like laughter. I asked, "They aren't setting up for another big attack. I thought Mugabe screwed their main ramp."
"I couldn't get close enough to catch any details. Mugabe is staying out where people can see him. But I think there was a battle. And I think Shadow Spinner's creeps got whipped. We may have friends out there, ready to bust us out."
"Calm down. Don't start packing your gear." One Eye snickered.
"That's the runt all over. Counting his chickens when he ain't even stole no eggs yet."
I grumbled. "You remember what we were just discussing? Stupid moves? And you'd dare get down on Goblin?" "Of course he would. That was his great mission."
"What's going on?"
Goblin demanded. Uncle Doge materialized. His presence ended the discussion. That man could be spookier than any shade. He moved so fast and quiet.
Speaker says, tell you, southerners carrying tools instead of weapons are assembling south of the city.
And what's that over there? From our perch, most of the activity was hidden behind the curve of the wall, but it looked like a big engineering party had begun to gather north of the city as well. You see any prisoners or slaves out there? Huh? What's that? That was the sparkle of sunlight off metal in the hills. The sparkle repeated itself. People were moving out there. Not carefully enough. Shadow Spinner's men had no need to sneak. I told Goblin, passed the word, full alert come sundown. Uncle Doge considered the hills.
You have good eyes, Bone Warrior.
Know something, Stubby? I'd a whole lot rather be called Mergen. The squat man smiled thinly.
As you wish, Mergen. I have come on behalf of the Speaker. He says, tell you, hard times are coming. He says, prepare your hearts and minds.
Hard times. One Eye laughed.
The party is over, kid. Now we got to pay for loafing around and getting fat while the Hooris slithered all over us.
Keep it in mind next time you're tempted to do some profiteering.
Ah!
You can't eat money, One Eye.
Killjoy.
That's me all over. Tell Weezer to hike over to the Citadel and tell Sindawe the Southerners are up to something. Sindawe might be all right. I could talk to him without having to conquer an urge to squeeze his throat. And this would cover me on keeping Mogaba informed. What would happen if the Shadow Master just up and walked away, leaving us to sort ourselves out? Sounded like the smart thing for him to do. Chapter 45. Weezer barely made it to the top. Then he spent 5 minutes hacking and wheezing before he could talk. That old man had no business soldiering at his age. He ought to be off, living off his grandchildren. But, like the rest of us, he had nothing outside the company. He would die under the Death's Head standard, under what passed for a standard today. It was sad, pathetic even. Weezer was an anomaly. Usually the mercenary life is brutal and short. Pain and fear and misery, only occasionally interrupted by a fleeting moment of pleasure. What keeps you sane is the unfailing comradeship of your brethren. In this company. In lesser bands. But they're not the Black Company. Croker and I both put a lot of effort into sustaining that brotherhood. In fact, it looked like time to resurrect Croker's habit of readings from the annals so the men would remember that they were part of something more enduring than most kingdoms. I told Weezer, you better take a couple hours off. He shook his head. He would go on the best he could until he could go on no more.
Thanar, Lieutenant! Sindawe sends greetings. He said, we better look out tonight.
He mentioned why?
He sort of hinted that Mogaba might try some big stunt after dark.
Mogaba was always trying some big stunt. Shadow Spinner ought to let him set himself up. One raid too many at the wrong time, and Mugabe would find out personally why Spinner was called a Shadow Master. Weezer said something in his native tongue. Only one eye understood him. Sounded like a question. One eye muttered a few clicky syllables in reply. I figured the old man wanted to know if it was all right to talk in front of the Nueng Bao. One eye gave him the go-ahead. Weezer said,
Sindawe said, tell you guys, the rumors about a big battle are probably true.
We owe Sindawe, guys, I said. That sounds to me like him telling us he won't back Mugabe 100% anymore.
Tai Day and Uncle Doge sucked up our conversation like Nueng Bao sponges. Tension built for hours. With no real evidence, we began to feel this night would be critical. Mostly the guys worried about new nastiness from Mugabe. We didn't expect trouble from the Shadow Master anytime soon. I kept an eye on the hills. One eye snapped,
That it is!
He shared my anticipations. Pinkish light flared. Lightning crackled around a bizarre rider.
She's back, somebody said. Where's the other one?
I did not see a Widowmaker right away. Panic swept the plain. The apparition had taken the scattered Shadowlander camps unawares. Sergeants shrieked orders. Messengers galloped around. Soldiers stumbled into one another.
There he is, Bucket yelled. There who is? Widowmaker,
he pointed.
The old man!
The Widowmaker figure shimmered back in the hills, larger than life. Goblin grabbed my arm. I don't know where he came from.
Look over there!
He indicated the Shadowlander main camp. We could not see the camp itself, but a pale, gangrenous glow rose from its approximate location. The light intensified steadily. Spinner wants to play, I observed.
Yeah. He's sending a big one.
A big what?
Do we need to get our heads down? Wait and see.
I waited, and I saw. A nasty ball of green fire streaked toward the hills. It hit near where Lifetaker first showed herself. Earth flew, stone burned, all to no avail. Lifetaker was long gone. He missed.
What an eye!
Lifetaker didn't play fair. She didn't stand still.
He made a stupid choice of tools,
One Eye sneered.
You can't expect somebody to just hang around and wait for you. Maybe that was his best go. He hasn't been healthy.
I sidled away. In a few minutes, Goblin and One Eye would start bickering. The confusion on the plain worsened. The Southerners were more rattled than seemed reasonable. What I could get from their chatter suggested that they had been caught just starting something big of their own, and their disarray left them virtually unable to defend themselves. In hushed tones, too, I heard Kina mentioned. Lifetaker, who resembled that goddess of corruption, vanished. Maybe she lost interest. She did not reappear. Shadow Spinner pasted the hills with any sorcery he could slap together. Other than starting a few brush fires, he had no obvious impact. The fox was in the henyard. Southerners scooted all over, their panic feeding on the panic of others. When one got close, my guys took turns sniping. Goblin said,
They keep cussing about their feet getting wet.
I heard that too. It made no sense.
Holy shit!
I don't know who said it, but I could not have agreed more. Scores of brilliant white fireballs erupted straight up above the Shadowlander main camp. They obliterated the darkness completely. They seemed a tool of more use to a Shadowmaster's enemies than to the villain himself. A huge uproar followed. Uncle Doge vanished. One moment he was beside me, the next a shadow running through the street below, then gone. One eye told me,
"This time, I'm sure it's Lady."
His tone alerted me. "But what?"
"But the other one ain't the captain."
Widowmaker had been visible for less than 1 minute.
"Tell me it ain't so," I muttered.
"What?"
"That we got two sets?
Each one only half the real thing?" A crow nearby cackled. I asked, "What kind of sorcery would do that? Split them in two?"
"I wish I could tell you something you want to hear, kid. But I've got a very bad feeling there's stuff going on we don't even want to know about."
Chapter 46. One Eye was a prophet, although I did want to know. And thanks to the Nuang Bao, I heard a story. The light across town faded. The attendant racket subsided. Part of that drifted toward the hills. The rest fell back toward Mogaba's part of town. The crackle of small sorceries rippled across the plain. The whole expanse glistened silver. That was a strange one. One Eye, what say we build a watchtower on top of one of the enfilading towers? That way, we could get high enough to see what Mogaba and Spinner are doing.
You got Nuang Bao to spy for you over there.
Suppose I don't ask you to do any work yourself?
The idea sounds a lot better already. But I still think the Nuang Bao could be your eyes. You play it right. You don't need to get as paranoid as Croker. Just look at what they bring you, so you see whose purpose it might serve. Consider what might be missing the same way.
Sometimes I'm as lazy as you are, I told One Eye. Only with me, it's mental. That sounds like a lot of thinking, and I'd rather see stuff with my own eyes anyway.
Just like the old man, he grumbled. You got to read them annals all the time. How about you read some that was written by somebody besides Croker? I was looking forward to a little relief from his righteousness.
So we were back to the black market bread scheme. Goblin turned up.
Pretty exciting stuff happening over there.
Yeah, like what?
I got up on the wall over there. For a while, Mogaba's guys weren't worried about getting caught letting me peek. He led this raid in person.
Just tell us about it,
One Eye grumbled.
You all the time got to flap on about stuff that...
A huge bug landed in One Eye's mouth. Goblin's smirk hinted that he might have been involved in the insect's errant navigation.
That Doge character can tell you more than me. Some of his guys snuck out there behind Mogaba's gang.
Why?
I think Mogaba was trying to bushwhack Spinner. But he stumbled into Lady instead.
You're shitting me.
When that bunch of flare balls went up, there she was. Her and about 15 guys. They were right outside the camp gate, practically crawling over Mogaba's mob. At least that's what I heard. I didn't see it myself.
So where's Uncle Doge?
Probably checking in with the speaker.
Probably. Yeah. Look, we've got a bunch of deserters from the first. See if some will sneak back to find out more.
Here comes Chunky Boy now.
We talked right in front of Ty Day, like he was deaf. Or like we didn't care squat what he heard. Uncle Doge brought a couple other Nguyen Bao. They surrounded another chunky boy. This one, a wide little Taglian. He seemed more prisoner than companion, though no weapons were in evidence. It amazed me that Uncle Doge could climb to the ramparts without breathing hard. Maybe he used some wild sorcery that stole Weezer's breath. That sounded like something out of the Goonie myth book.
What have you got, Uncle?
I stared at the squat Taglian. He was indifferent to my gaze.
An outsider. The speaker sent Ban and Bin to watch the black men, who wanted to attack the Shadow Master himself. But they ran into others from the outside, pursuing a similar goal. This one left his party and joined those running for the wall when the flares went up. The outsider group may have been betrayed intentionally, so this one could become separated in the confusion.
I continued to study the outsider. He was a Goonie, more stockily built than anyone in these parts. Maybe he worked at that. He seemed possessed of a powerful arrogance. I asked, "Is there anything special about him?" Uncle Doge seemed strongly interested in him, too.
"He bears the mark of Kadi."
That took a moment.
Oh, yeah.
In the books from the catacombs, Kadi was an alternate or regional name for Kina. There were quite a few of those. If you say so, I don't see it myself, point it out. Uncle Doge's eyes narrowed. He drew a deep breath, exasperated.
"Even now, you refuse to reveal yourself, Soldier of Darkness."
"Even now, I don't have any fucking idea what you're raving about. I am tired of hearing it." I was developing suspicions, though. Instead of sputtering and fussing and offering cryptic grumbles, why don't you say something I can understand? Pretend I'm what I say I am, and can't call down the lightning to part your hair. Who is this guy? Who do you think I am? Come on, Uncle. Talk to me.
"He is a slave of Kadi."
Uncle Doge glared at me, daring me not to understand that. He did not want to be more explicit. That made no sense to me, but I am not a superstitious man. Did he believe his one mouth had the power to raise the she-devil alone? "Kina must be one badass bitch," I told One Eye. "She's got Uncle drizzling down his leg."
You got a name?"
"I am Sindhu. I am of the staff of the warrior woman you call Lady. I was sent to observe the situation here."
He continued to meet my gaze. His eyes were colder than any lizard's. "Sounds reasonable enough, if taken with a block of salt."
"Lady. This is the lady who was second in command in the Black Company?"
"That lady. The goddess has smiled upon her."
I asked Uncle Doge, "Is he a liaison man, then? Between us and Lady?"
"He may tell you so, but he is a spy for the Tug. He will not speak truth when a lie will do."
"Uncle, old buddy, you and me and the old man need to sit down and try to talk the same language for a while. What do you think?" Uncle Doge grunted, which could mean anything.
"The Tug will not speak truth when a lie will do."
Sindhu was amused. The man struck me as a complete false face. I said, "Goblin, find this guy some place to sleep." I shifted languages. "And don't let him out of your sight."
"I have chores enough already."
"Somebody's sight,"
All right.
I don't like him at all. I don't think I'm going to like him even this much tomorrow morning. He smells like trouble. One Eye agreed.
Big trouble. Why don't we just chuck his hairy ass off the wall, then?
Goblin can be pragmatic in the extreme.
Because I want to find out more about him, I think we've crawled right up to the edge of the mystery that has hung us up ever since we got here. Let him run free. We'll play dumb and keep track of every breath he takes.
I was sure I could count on the speaker's help with that. My two wizards scowled and grumbled. Hard to blame them. They always end up carrying the load. Chapter 47. I was snoring heroically down deep in our warrens, having gone to Nod confident I could sleep in. Tomorrow, nobody would have the ambition to get up to any mischief. I was down there so far and so far out of the way that not five people knew where to find me. I was on a mission to catch up on my sleep. If the end of the world came, the guys could celebrate without me. Somebody shook me. I refused to believe it. It had to be a bad dream.
Mergen, come on. You got to come see this.
No, I didn't.
Mergen!
I cracked an eyelid.
I'm trying to get some sleep here, Bucket. Go away.
You ain't got time. You gotta come see.
I gotta come see what?
You'll see. Come on.
There would be no winning this. He would pester me till I lost my temper, then get his feelings hurt. But the long climb to the sunshine was not an inducement to rise.
All right. All right.
I got up and got myself together. They didn't need to drag me out, but I understood the impulse. Things had changed. Radically. I stared at the plane, mouth open. Only what plane? Dejigore was surrounded by a shallow lake that featured the tops of burial mounds as small islands. Each mound boasted its handful of disconsolate animals.
How deep is it?
I asked. And, there any chance we can catch some of those critters for the pot? With all that water down there, no southerner would be guarding against sorties.
Right now, 5 feet, Goblin said. I had men go down and measure.
Is it still coming up? Where is it coming from? Where's Shadow Spinner?
Goblin pointed.
I don't know about Spinner, but there's the water. Still coming in.
I have good eyes. I made out the water boiling and foaming as it roared out of the hills. The old aqueduct came down there, didn't it? Two major canals had irrigated the hill farms and fed aqueducts to Dejigore before the fighting started. The company cut those when the southerners were on the inside. Now the city survived on rainwater and the contents of large, deep, very stagnant cisterns we knew nothing about back then.
Exactly. Clayton and his brothers figure they diverted the entire river into the canal. Same thing south of town.
Dejigore sits on a plain below the level of the country beyond the hills. Modest rivers run both west and southeast of the hills. I presume the boys are studying the engineering aspects? I asked.
Them and 36 Taglians who had some skills the guys could use?
Any conclusions yet?
Like? Like, how high will the water get? Are we going to drown?
If that was Shadow Spinner's plan, it indicated major changes in his thinking. Before, he wanted Dejigore recovered intact. This seemed a more practical and final answer to his problems, though more destructive of property which of course was more valuable than any number of lives.
They're trying to figure that out right now,
I grunted. A ticket spinner pulled out after Lady left.
No,
One Eye responded.
They hung around to swim. They don't get to a lot of beach parties where they come from.
Man's not as stupid as we thought, I mused.
Ah!
He floods the plane. Even if he don't drown us, he locks us up so tight, he don't have to use hardly any men to keep us under control. He can chase Lady all he wants. We can't help her and she can't help us. For him, it's better than getting reinforcements out of the Shadowlands. Long Shadow soldiers couldn't be trusted behind his back. Ty Day showed up. He always turned up soon after I came out, which indicated how closely we were being watched. Ty Day was a waste of manpower. He didn't carry many messages. He didn't understand any of our languages well enough to be a good spy for the speaker. But he was always, always just a few steps away. There would be a reason. The speaker would do nothing without consideration. I just did not grasp his view of the world. The longer I stared at the flood, the more questions I came up with that needed answers soon. Most critical, how high would the water rise? How long would it take to do so? The rate of rise would slow down substantially as each vertical foot required more water volume because of the fallback of the hills, evaporation from the larger surface area, and absorption by more covered soil. I told Goblin and One Eye, dig up every educated man in town and give him to the brothers. I thought about building boats and heightening towers and securing stores. I thought about our vast and wonderful warrens and the likelihood that thousands of man-hours would go for naught. I thought about how we would have to prepare ourselves mentally for lots worse if we were going to survive. I thought about Kidam and his talk of hard times to come. Ty Day stepped over when nobody else was near.
Grandfather would speak with you, soon if possible.
His manners were impeccable. He did not call me Stone Soldier, even once. The old man must want something badly. As you wish. I noticed the outsider Sindhu on the battlements off toward the western gate. I could feel him watching me.
One Eye! What?
You don't need to bark. If you want to bark, I'll see if I can have the Shadow Master turn you into a dog. One Eye was startled.
Huh? You guys keeping an eye on our guest? Geek and Freak are taking turns. He ain't done much yet. Wandered around town, talked to people, tried visiting with the Taglians here and over with Mogaba. Ours wouldn't have anything to do with him. The Al Kul Company ran him off with their swords drawn.
Would anybody talk about him? One Eye shook his head.
It's the same old shit. Maybe even worse. You better make it clear him being here wasn't your idea.
Ty Day, listening, murmured something that sounded Kabbalistic. He followed with a gesture resembling that meant to avert the evil eye.
Hi, One Eye said. Something can bother these guys after all.
I'm going to go listen to their boss talk. You're in charge, but only because everybody else around here is less trustworthy than you.
Thanks a shitload, kid. You make a guy feel like he's on top of the world. Try to have something left when I get back.
Chapter 48. The vertigo hit me in the same alleyway as before, just yesterday. I remembered it as the darkness closed in. This was more of a sneaking, gentle, enveloping blackness than the thunderbolts that got me before. My thoughts scrambled, but I did recall several minimal episodes since the big blackout. Just moments when I was out of my head, and I came back as soon as somebody said something. This one was stronger. Tide's hands closed on my left bicep. He spoke, but his words were sounds that had no meaning. The light faded. My knees went watery. Then there was no sensation at all. There was a place that was brighter than day, although it was daytime. Huge mirrors gathered sunlight and splashed it onto one tall, gaunt individual in black. The gaunt man stood upon a windswept parapet high above a darkening land. A scream ripped through the air. A dark rectangle slanted toward the tower from high above and far away. The gaunt figure fitted a stylized mask to its face. Its breathing increased pace, as though it needed more air to face visitors. Another scream tore the air. The gaunt man muttered, "Someday." The ragged flying carpet settled a short distance away. The masked man remained motionless, glaring at every hint of shadow around the device. The wind tugged at his robe. Three persons rode the flying carpet. One was a tiny thing, bundled in dark, stinking rags crumbling with mildew. He was masked, too, and shook continuously. He could not control the occasional scream. He was the Howler, one of the world's oldest and most wicked sorcerers. The carpet was his creation. The gaunt man hated him. The gaunt man hated everybody. He had little love for himself. He mastered his hatreds for short periods only, entirely through the implacable exercise of will. He had a powerful will, as long as he was not threatened physically. The ragball gurgled as it stifled a scream. Howler's nearest companion was a short, skinny, filthy little man in a ragged loincloth and grubby turban. He was frightened. His name was Narayan Singh, living saint of the deceiver cult, alive only because of Howler's intercession. Long Shadow considered Singh less than a flop of buffalo dung. Nevertheless, he had potential as a tool. The reach of his cult was long and lethal. Singh's opinion of his own new ally was of no supreme elevation either. Beyond Singh was a child, a pretty little thing, though filthier than the Jamadar. She had huge brown eyes, eyes like the windows of hell, eyes that knew all evil of old, and would revel in it now and forevermore. Those eyes troubled even Long Shadow. There were whirlpools of darkness that pulled, pulled, twisted, hypnotized. A sudden sharp pain in my left knee sent wires of agony searing through my flesh. I groaned. I shook my head. The stink of an alleyway penetrated my awareness. I seemed blind, but my eyes, apparently, were adapted to brilliant sunlight. Hands gripped my left arm, pulling, lifting. My vision began to return. I looked up. A gaunt face looked back, startling me. I retained a legacy of fear from my vision, though what that had been was fading already. I tried to hang on, but the pain in my knee and Tide talking shattered my concentration. "I'm all right," I said. "Just hurt my knee." I tried to stand. When I took a step, the knee almost folded.
I'll manage, damn it.
I pushed his hands away. The vision was gone except for a memory that it had happened. Had it been the same with my other blackouts? Were there visions that flew away so thoroughly that I could not recall having had them? Did they have any connection with reality? Vaguely, I recalled seeing lots of familiar faces. I would discuss it with Goblin and One Eye. They ought to know what to make of it. They picked up a little loose change interpreting dreams. Tide started gabbling the moment we entered the speaker's presence. Kidam considered me speculatively, his expression deepening oddly as Tide chattered. The old man appeared to be alone when we walked in, but as Tide talked and Kidam became unusually attentive, other Nguyen Bao came out of the shadows to study me. Hong Tre and Ki Gota were the first. The old woman settled by her husband. Kidam said,
I hope you do not mind. Sometimes she is able to part the veil of time.
Gota said nothing. I suspected that that was unusual. The beautiful woman appeared. She got right into the tea service business. Tea is a big thing with the Nguyen Bao. Did she serve any other function in the family? The guy in the shadows wasn't moaning and groaning today. Had he left us? Not yet, the speaker said, reading my glance.
But soon.
Again he sensed a question.
We sustain our share of the marriage vow, even though he betrayed his. We will stand before the judges of time without stain on our karma.
I had a notion what he meant only because I was studying the Jaikuri scriptures. You're a good people. Kidam was amused.
Some might argue. We do strive to be an honorable folk.
I understand. We so strive in the Black Company.
Excellent.
I came because Tide said you want to talk.
I did.
I waited. My gaze kept straying to the woman making tea.
Standard bearer.
I started.
No,
I said softly, unaware that I was speaking aloud. I hadn't fallen into one of those black fugues. I'd just become distracted momentarily. Couldn't blame a man for that. Not with a woman like that to distract him. I said, Thank you, Speaker, for not labeling me with one of those unappealing names you tend to employ. I couldn't resist a small smile that told him I knew he wanted something badly enough to keep me in a generous mood. He nodded in turn, acknowledging my awareness. Damn. I was turning into an old man myself. Maybe we could sit here grinning and grunting and nodding and arrange the whole future of the world. Thank you, I said, when the pretty woman presented my tea. That surprised her. She looked me in the eye for a moment, startling me. Her eyes were green. She neither smiled nor acknowledged me in any other way. Remarkable, I said to nobody in particular. Green eyes. Then I controlled myself and waited while the speaker sipped some tea before he started circling in on his problem. He told me,
Green eyes are rare and greatly admired among Nguyen Bao.
He took a ritual sip.
Hong Tre may part the veil occasionally, but her visions are not always true or not always fixed. Or they may be visions that have not yet come to pass. She does not see recognizable people, so it is hard to determine when the visions might be taking place.
The woman in question sat with eyes downcast, slowly turning a jade bracelet that hung loose upon her left wrist. Her eyes were green, too.
She foresaw the flood.
We believed that would prove to be a false vision because we could imagine no way so much water could be brought to Jaikur.
But we're in the middle of a lake now. The world's whitest moat. The Shadowlanders won't bother us anymore. It took the old man a minute to understand that I wasn't serious.
Oh!
He chuckled. Hong Trey looked up and smiled. She had gotten the joke first.
I see, yes. But it will serve the Shadow Master, not us. Any attempt to leave will require rafts or boats, easily spotted, which cannot move enough men to force a breakthrough.
The old boy was a general, too. You got it. Shadow Spinner had found an ingenious solution to his manpower problem. Now he could challenge Lady, confident that we would not jump on his back.
The reason I wish to confer is that in her vision, Hong Trey saw the water rise to within 10 feet of the battlements.
That would make 70 feet of water. I glanced at the old woman. She seemed to be studying me in a way that had nothing to do with curiosity. That's a shitload.
There is another problem.
Which is?
We try to calculate how many structures will rise above the waterline.
Uh-oh. I see. I saw. Dejigori enjoyed a vertically oriented architecture, as walled cities do, but not many buildings overtopped the wall. And most surviving structures, even many that were partially burned, were occupied by someone. There would not be much housing available if the city flooded. Luckily for us old crew, our quarter boasted a lot of tall tenements.
Uh-oh, indeed. In this area, there are enough such structures to house our few pilgrims. But elsewhere, it will go hard for the Jaikuri when the black men and their soldiers finally understand how much space they will need.
No doubt. I thought a moment. Hell. People could camp out on the wall. Them getting in the way would not be a problem militarily. Still, whatever we did, life would become pure hell if the water rose that high. Presents a dilemma, doesn't it?
Possibly a larger dilemma than you suspect.
How so?
If preparations are not initiated immediately, much that might prove useful will be lost. But if you tell Mogaba this, then it is likely the strong will rob the weak and leave them to suffer. There is now no need to exercise restraint because of potential attack.
I see. Actually, I had foreseen the scramble for stores and high ground. But I did overlook the fact that Shadow Spinner, extricating himself, also freed Mogaba to manage internal frictions in a manner more to his liking. You have something in mind?
I wish to examine the possibility of a temporary alliance until Jaikur is relieved.
Has Hong Trey foreseen that as well?
No.
I was surprised by the black despair that collapsed upon me.
She has seen nothing one way or the other.
I brightened. A very little.
I am reluctant to undertake such an obligation,
Kidam confessed.
It was not my idea. It was Sara's.
He indicated the beautiful tea server.
But she trusts you for no reason she will explain. And moreover, her arguments make sense.
Hung Tre wore a bemused expression. There was, in the way she looked at me, a hint that she foresaw much that she didn't share. I shivered. Kidam continued.
We have no hope, if we assume a traditional Nguyenbao stance and depend upon ourselves alone. You have little hope, if your Mokapa does not feel he needs your arms anymore.
I stared at the beautiful one, though that was bad manners. She blushed. The attraction was so powerful suddenly that I gasped. I felt as though I had known her several lifetimes already. What the? This didn't happen to me. Not anymore, anyway. I was no 16-year-old. Hell, I never felt like this when I was 16. My soul was trying to tell me I knew this woman as well as a man ever knew any woman, when in truth I had only just heard her name spoken for the first time. There was something else over there, with her. That was more than one lovely daydream. I knew another one just like her. Someone else. The darkness came. It was sudden and absolute, and I had no time to decide if I was running away or being pulled down. Chapter 49. There was a long, long time in the dreamless dark. A time without an eye. A time neither warm nor cold. A time with no happiness or fear or pain, in a place no tortured soul would want to leave. But a pin pricked a hole in the envelope. The tiniest thread of light found its way in and fell upon an imaginary eye. Movement. A rush toward a point which swelled and became a passageway into a world of time and matter and pain. I knew who I was. I staggered under the crushing weight of a host of congruent memories surfacing all at once. A voice spoke to me, but I could not comprehend its words. I floated like gossamer through golden caverns where old men sat beside the way, frozen in time, immortal but unable to move an eyelid. Madmen they. Some were covered with fairy webs of ice, as though a thousand winter spiders had spun threads of frozen water. Above, an enchanted forest of icicles grew downward from the cavern ceiling. Because I had memories of memories within memories, I recalled having read words very much like those somewhere in something I didn't believe had yet been written. Come. The power of the call was like the punch of a thunderbolt. Darkness came. I tumbled away, ceased being I. Nevertheless, before I faded from that cavern, I sensed a startled presence coming alert and striving to direct its attention my way. Somehow, I had gone somewhere where no mortal was welcome to travel, and still come away. Memory fled, but pain went along on the journey. Chapter 50. Light in the darkness again. I began to be I, though without a name. I shied from the light. The light was not a pleasant place. The pain would be waiting. But something farther beneath my surface turned to the light, like a drowning man fighting toward life-saving air. I became aware that I was flesh. I felt my muscles tightened till some were cramped. My throat was painfully dry. I tried to talk.
Speaker.
I rasped. Someone stirred, but no one replied. I was slumped in a chair. The Nguyen Bao had no furniture in their place, which was little more than an animal den. Had they returned me to my own people? I forced an eye open. What the hell? What was this place? A dungeon? A torture chamber? Had Mogaba snatched me? There was a skinny little Taglian over there tied into a chair just like mine, and another man was strapped onto a table. That was Smoke, the Taglian royal wizard. I levered myself up. That hurt. A lot. The prisoner in the chair watched me warily. Where am I? I asked. His wariness redoubled. His lips pursed. He said nothing. I looked around. I was in a dusty, almost barren chamber, but the nature of the stone answered my question. I was in Taglios. This was the royal palace. There is no stone like this stone anywhere else. How? Ever seen paint run down a wall? That's what happened to reality. Right in front of my eyes, it ran and dribbled and streaked. The man in the chair squeaked. He shook. I have no idea what he thought he saw, but reality drifted away, and I was in a gray place, confused, filled with memories of things never experienced or seen. Then the confusion began to sort itself out, and the gray washed away, and in a short time, I was in a room somewhere in the palace at Trogo Taglios. Smoke lay on his table, breathing slowly and shallowly as always. The deceiver was in his seat. He earned a narrow-eyed glare because of the way he was sweating. What was he up to now? His eyes bugged. What did he see when he looked at me? I rose, aware that I had to be recovering from one of my spells. But there was no one here who could have brought me back. Didn't it take Croaker or One Eye to drag me up out of the depths of darkness? Hints of memory stirred in the deeps of my mind. I snatched at them, tried desperately to hang on. Something in a cavern. A song of shadow. Waking up once in a past long ago, but still only a moment earlier in this time, I was weak. This business was debilitating, and thirst was becoming a rage within me. I could do something about that. A pitcher and metal cup stood on the table beside Smoke's head. Beneath the cup, I found a scrap of paper torn from a larger sheet. It carried a message in Croaker's tight script. No time to coddle you now, Mergen. If you wake up on your own, drink this water. There is food in the box. One Eye or I will be back as soon as possible. The scrap might have come from a procurement request. The old man hates to waste any fragment of blank paper. Paper is too damned dear. I checked the tin box on the other side of Smoke's head. It was filled with heavy, unleavened cakes of the sort my mother-in-law bakes, despite all pleas to desist. In fact, on closer examination, I knew no one else could have baked them. If I survived here, I would owe Croaker a swift kick in the slats. P.S. checked the strangler's bonds. He nearly got away once already. So that was what he was doing when I woke up. He wanted to worm out so he could murder me and my pal Smoke and then make a run for it. I drank from the pitcher. The deceiver looked at me with a longing you could almost smell. "Want a sip?" I asked. "Just tell me what's going on." The man wasn't ready to sell his soul for a drink of water. Soon after I wolfed down one of Mother Gota's sinkers, I felt my strength returning.
"Let's get you cinched up good and tight," I told my companion.
"Wouldn't want you wandering off and getting hurt." He stared at me in silence while I fixed him up. He didn't need to speak to let me know what was on his mind. I told him, "This is the risk you took when you signed on with the bad guys." He wouldn't argue, but he refused to agree. I was confused. I was the bad guy because I wasn't blazing hot on the effort to bring Kina back into the world. I patted his head. "You could be right, brother. But I hope not. Here." I snatched up the cloth and drew it back over him where it belonged. Then I drank some more water and ate part of a roll, and when I got to feeling frisky, I decided to return to my apartment. It was subjective as hell, but it was an age since I had seen my wife. In reality, it couldn't have been more than a few hours. I got lost.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook, so please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
And now, part two of Bleak Seasons, written by Glenn Cook and read by Jonathan Davis.
Chapter 51. Of course I got lost. It was inevitable. The future me within me didn't recall anything else, but it did remember that I was going to get lost, then find my way to some place I wasn't trying to go. That much came to me just after I realized that I didn't have a clue how to get back to any familiar part of the palace. I stopped to take stock. At that moment, I had enough near-current memories of other Mergans from other times that I was ready to trust any memory from any time, though it came with no supporting context whatsoever. This memory of getting lost carried flavors of the excitement of unexpected discovery and powerful overtones of pain. An echo told me I didn't want to find my way again. Somewhere, while still stubbornly trying to get out, I came upon a gloomy hallway that seemed to smell of old magic. A few yards away, a shattered door hung precariously upon a single hinge. Discovery beckoned. I went forward unafraid. One look inside told me I had found Smoke's secret library. The place where the only surviving copies of the first several annals had been gathered and sealed away, so there would be no chance we Black Company types would ever chance upon them. I wanted to read them so badly. But I hadn't come to read. I didn't have time to sort the wheat from the chaff of 100 other books. I had to get back to my family. I strove valiantly but couldn't get there. Head spinning, I tried to retrace my steps. It looked like I would have to wait with Smoke until One Eye or the old man turned up. They could lead me out the easy way and maybe tell me why I didn't want to go, because that part wouldn't come to mind clearly. I got back to Smoke easily with no misturns. I had begun to suspect that there were spells webbed into that part of the palace, cast so no intruder could find his way around the maze without One Eye's blessing. It might be that all paths led to the same destination, or maybe they all led away if you didn't start out with Smoke to begin. That wouldn't surprise me, though. I had no idea if One Eye had the skill and power to manage it, nor would it surprise me to find out that he didn't remember casting the spell in the first place, so had made no provision for me to get around it. The deceiver was wiggling when I returned. My steps so soft he didn't sense my presence immediately. He froze when he did. Give that man credit for determination. I settled into the empty chair. I waited. Nobody came. It seemed hours passed, but probably it was just a few long minutes. I got up and tramped around, back and forth. I tormented the strangler some, but that just made me feel bad, too. I covered him up and sat down again. I stared at smoke. I thought about the Black Company and its tribulations. I remembered what smoke could do. Why not? Just to kill time? But where to go? What to see? When? Why not the great enemy again? It was easy this time. Nothing to it. Like closing my eyes and drifting off into a reverie. I didn't go without some reluctance. I was spending way too much time beyond the normal pale against my will. Why add to my confusion by going wandering on my own, too? With almost a snap and pop, I found myself adrift outside Fortress Overlook. The mad sorcerer Longshadow stood atop one of his tall towers, amidst reflected light, less than 10 feet away. I suffered a mild panic. He was looking right at me. Right through me. Behind him, stance mocking, was that wretch Narayan Singh with Croker's kid, the mortal flesh of Kina, the daughter of night, the one foretold who would bring on the deceiver's year of the skulls, which will end with the awakening of their goddess. Singh never let the child out of his sight. Singh was a dangerous tool, but Long Shadow needed every ally willing to join him. Quite a few folks seemed willing to sign on against the Black Company. A figure emerged from a hatchway, apparently dark only because of the intensity of the light surrounding the mad wizard. This man was tall, ebony, lithe as a panther. No anger touched me because emotions turned pale in Smoke's domain, although this was Mogapa, the most dangerous of the Shadowlander generals. I suspect Long Shadow appreciated Mogapa less for his abilities than because he could be trusted. Mogapa has nowhere to run. The company stands astride every road to safety. I can't understand why Croker doesn't hate Mogapa. Hell, he makes excuses for the man, even feels sorry for him. He takes his feud with Blade much more to heart. Mogapa said,
Howler brought news. The storm system no longer works.
Long Shadow grunted.
I saw. My small shadows remain useful. I recall that I predicted they would catch on quickly. Have you any thoughts on how the woman Senjak could regain her powers, when, by the nature of these things, she ought to be at the mercy of anyone who knows her true name?
I had a feeling he really wanted to know how Howler could survive a lady with her powers restored and her old wicked knowledge intact. Long Shadow viewed the world through a lens of paranoia. I wondered myself about Lady's powers. Croker guessed it had something to do with crossing the equator. That didn't sound plausible. Neither One Eye nor Goblin would hazard a guess. Lady herself refused to discuss it. I had no idea what she believed. Nobody pressed. That wasn't something you did if you wanted to stay friendly with somebody like Lady. She can get real unpleasant if she doesn't like you.
No ideas, Mogapa said. It isn't something I understand.
There were many things Mogapa didn't understand, including any languages native to that region. He communicated with Long Shadow, using his improved but still flawed Taglian.
Maybe she changed her name.
Could they do that? I realized the remark was Mogava's attempt at a joke, but Long Shadow did mull it over as though it was possible in some subjective fashion. The moment passed. Long Shadow faced Sing.
Deceiver, why are you here? What machinations has the Howler involved you in now?
Mogava answered for Narayan.
The Black Company jumped them in their holy grove and killed everyone but him and the girl. Your Shadow Weavers barely had time to call for Howler before they died. Howler found these two, hiding a few miles away, and got them out only yards ahead of the pursuit.
So, this was only a short while after our raid. And here was a surprise. I believed Narayan had gotten warning from the Shadow Master. But he hadn't. So how had he shaken the sleep spell? Mention of the Shadow Weavers rocked Long Shadow. I thought he would fly into one of his famed, foamy-mouthed rages. Those strange little old men were a resource he dared not squander. It took a lifetime to train them. And we've taken care of a bunch of them over the years. Long Shadow sucked in a deep breath, held it, restrained his insanity.
My error. I should not have sent them. Have you any idea how our enemies could appear at a time so propitious to their cause?
Nobody volunteered the news that we could hover over his shoulder any time the urge hit. Long Shadow observed,
"This is not good. Each day they develop new resources. Each day ours dwindle."
He glared at Singh.
"What are we getting from these deceivers?"
Mogava replied,
"They spy. Before long, they will undertake selected assassinations. The enemy shows no awareness of that program. If their assassinations succeed, the result will be of more value than anything but a decisive encounter on the battlefield."
Mogava invited comment from Singh with his glance, but Narayan held his tongue. Mogava said,
"Unfortunately, the intelligence the deceivers gather grows less reliable with each report. The enemy have enjoyed considerable success in their efforts to eliminate the cult."
Still no one else spoke. Mogava continued,
"Lady and Kroka have become very aggressive against spies. I believe that indicates a major move is imminent."
"It's winter,"
Long Shadow said, "and my enemies are in no hurry. They're content to nibble me to death. This so-called liberator will never be satisfied that he has men and weapons enough."
He was right about that. Croker never stopped going after more. The Howler joined the group, stifling a scream as he did so. He husked,
"The enemy labor battalions have completed the paved road linking Taglios and Stormgart. A similar road is almost complete from Stormgart to Shadowlight."
Shadowlight lies near the heart of the most populous and prosperous region of the Shadowlands. Shadow Spinner had been overlord there, nominally. The city and its environs still owed allegiance to Long Shadow. yet our soldiers were building a road in the area untroubled. I wondered why. Croker's strategic plan didn't require it. He had no intention of besieging Shadowlight. That would tie up too many men for far too long. Mogava grumbled.
They press us everywhere. No day passes but that we hear of the fall of another town or village. Many places the locals no longer resist at all. And it would be folly to assume that Croker and Lady will respect the season.
Longshadow turned his dread mask toward Mogava, who flinched.
Have you done anything to make it difficult to sustain a major campaign, General?
An army must live off the land if it ventures far from home. You can't carry enough food and fodder to sustain it any length of time.
Very little.
Mogava didn't show an ounce of contrition.
I have my orders. And our enemies know what those orders are.
What?
Now Longshadow was testy.
They expect me to sit still.
Mogava indicated Singh, who nodded agreement reluctantly.
Their strategy assumes that I will defend one fixed point. Because your orders constrain me to do just that, they scatter their forces and attack everywhere. Blade cannot blunt their sword alone. The villages will not resist because the people know no help will come. I could defeat the fools in detail, in a short while, if our strategy changed suddenly.
I don't think so, I thought, floating there smug in the knowledge that we had smoke.
Now!
Longshadow forced his quaking flesh to face southward. He glared at the plain of glittering stone.
We will discuss military matters in private only, General.
Howler delivered a horrible scream edged with mockery. Singh practically dove through the hatchway. His contempt for the Shadow Master was obvious to everyone but Longshadow himself, though it was likely Longshadow wouldn't have cared. To the Shadow Master, the Strangler was little more than a useful termite. In his mind, none of us were much more than pesky insects. The child left last. She considered Longshadow coldly. Her eyes seemed as old and wicked as time itself. She was a scary little thing for sure. I wondered what the old man thought when he saw her, or if he even dared look. Longshadow said,
They don't think I know what I'm doing.
My soldiers are wasted where they are, Mogava replied. They're losing what edge they had.
You may be right,
but to attack in any direction, you will have to leave what protection I am able to afford you. Without my lost comrades, I cannot reach nearly as far as once I did. Will you risk their sorcery without mine to support you?
Mogava grunted. He glared at the glittering plain.
You believe I am a coward for fearing that, General?
I stipulate the danger. I grant the value of your protection.
But there is much that I could do anyway.
Blade has been allowed to act on a limited scale and has accomplished great things. For certain, he has demonstrated repeatedly how these Taglians will collapse if you attack their weaknesses.
You trust Blade.
More than most. Like me, he has nowhere else to run. But I trust no one completely.
our allies least of all. Neither Howler nor the Deceiver joined us out of love for our cause.
Indeed. Apparently amused, Long Shadow seemed to relax. I must explain, General.
Mugabe's surprise told me that this was an extraordinary eventuality.
I do not stay bottled up here because of the plane. I can leave Overlook for short periods. I will, if I must. The Shadowgate wards are fresh and strong and reliable and entirely under my control. But if I do venture out, I will have to do so by stealth.
Mugabe grunted again.
The reason I stay here is that there are some less obvious players in this game.
Mugabe frowned. Sounded like a crock to me, too.
Howler springs from that clan once known as the Ten Who Were Taken.
I know.
Storm Shadow matriculated from that slave school as well. Another graduate was Sanjak's sister. They called her Soul Catcher.
I believe we've met.
Yes. She embarrassed you at Stormguard.
Actually, that was Lady that time, wasn't it?
Mugabe nodded. I was surprised. Time seemed to have given him the ability to manage his temper.
Some years ago, circumstances deceived Howler and I. We took Soulcatcher prisoner under the impression that we had captured her sister. She was masquerading as Senjak at the time, so the mistake was more her fault than ours. She escaped during some confusion that arose later. Although we did not treat her severely, she bears us an unreasonable ill will. She has done us mischief before now and awaits the opportunity to do us major harm.
You think if you left Overlook she might invite herself inside and forget to leave the door unlocked?
Exactly. Huh. Imagine hijacking that incredible fortress.
Mugabe sighed. So whether I like it or not, it will have to be decided on the plain of Charandaprash.
Yes.
Will you win?
Yes. Mugabe never did lack confidence. As long as Croker remains the man I knew. Scarred by that streak of softness.
If he hides behind 100 masks, his soft streak may be another of those.
So this man concerns you despite your desire to discount him.
We continue to play to his strengths, not to attack his weaknesses. We allow him time to think, to plan, to maneuver, so he does not need to be subtle. His forces advance everywhere. Along the frontier, the people are more afraid of the Black Company than of you. For pure viciousness, there's nothing to match his war against Singh's kind. The Croker I remember would have taken prisoners. He would have pardoned stranglers willing to abandon their religion.
Right, I thought sarcastically. Then I reconsidered.
Mugabe might be correct. Croker had been forgiving once upon a time.
Maybe Sanjak wants the example made.
Possibly. She is that hard. But her influence doesn't explain Croker's having spent 7,000 lives trying to get Blade.
What?
This was news.
Blade deserted him.
I deserted him.
and I was company. Blade was only an adventurer, not a brother. He hasn't come after me that way. With Blade, he's fighting a personal war.
The falling out with Blade and Blade's subsequent flight and defection baffled a lot of people, especially his buddies Cordy and Willow. And my name can go to the top of the list. Whispers were that Croker stumbled onto something real going on between Lady and Blade. Whatever. It was certain that he was as obsessive about Blade as he was about Narayan Singh. Lady didn't interfere in Croker's vendetta. Neither did she help.
That troubles you.
Croker confuses me. In some ways he has become dangerously unpredictable. At the same time, he becomes more and more the high priest of the Black Company legend, admitting no other gods before his precious annals.
That wasn't true. Croker grew less interested all the time. But allow Mogava his hyperbole. He wanted to sell something. Mogava continued.
I fear he may become so skewed. He'll attack in a way so novel, we won't recognize it until it's too late.
As long as he comes, only disaster awaits him.
He'll come. But is the overall outcome so certain?
I got the feeling both men nurtured major doubts, but each mostly about the other.
You circle back upon my constraints. Desist. You fear him?
I dread him. More than I dread Lady. Lady is straightforward in her enmity. She comes right at you with everything she has. Croker is determined to flim-flam you into looking somewhere else while he sticks a knife in your back. He will come at you with everything he has too, but how will he use it? He is not a man of honor.
Mogava didn't really mean that Croker was dishonorable, but that he was not a gentleman in the sense that meant so much to Mogava, who could not be considered a cavalier himself anymore.
Mogava continued. He's no longer sane. I do not believe he is sure what he is doing himself. These days he has to face much for which there is no precedent in his annals.
Wrong again, Chappie. After 400 years, there is a precedent for everything in the annals somewhere. The trick is knowing how to look.
He has limits, General.
Of course. Those Taglians are factious and divisive.
And that could be his undoing.
Politically, we will have no option but to try his luck at Charandaprash soon, where we will crush him. And if I do, we should consider the possibilities of life unplagued by this disease called the Black Company.
Oh.
Winning one battle will not be enough. If even one of them survives and maintains possession of the lands of passion, new armies will rise against us. Lady proved that.
Then you will have the pleasure of crushing them again.
Mogava wanted to argue but elected not to bark into the wind.
Once Overlook is complete, you can hair off on any adventure you like, with my approval and with my total support.
Adventure.
I understand you better than you suppose. You were Gaersley's greatest warrior, but you could not prove that to yourself. In the Black Company, you were overshadowed by your captain and Sanjak. It was necessary for you to have command in order to demonstrate your scope and genius. When you did have an opportunity, all your efforts were sabotaged and suborned. You came to me because the Black Company would not allow you the opportunity you need.
Mugabe nodded. He didn't seem pleased with himself, though, and that surprised me. I had thought him too self-centered to entertain moral doubts.
Go. Conquer the world, General. I'll enjoy helping you. But you have to crush the Black Company first. You have to stop the Taglians, because you will have nothing if I fall. Will the Strangler be much help? Really?
He could be. He talks big about his goddess getting involved, but I won't count on that. I've never seen the gods actually take a hand in mortal affairs.
Odd. Mugabe's god was Narayan's goddess, more or less. Had Mugabe lost his faith? Maybe Dejigore had scarred him deeply, too.
Use them up. Leave none over to turn on us later.
In my imagination, the Shadow Master was always this huge, stinking devil incarnate, a colorful lunatic, the magnitude of the worst taken back in the North. But the real Long Shadow was just a mean-spirited old man, blessed with too much power. He told Mugabe,
"If this becomes the Year of the Skulls, I want it to be our year. Not theirs."
Understood. What do you think of the child?
Long Shadow grunted uncomfortably.
Spooky, right? 1,000 years old. Her mother in miniature. Only worse. More intense, with a deeper darkness inside.
He could be right. The kid definitely looked weird and evil from my ghost's eye view. The Shadow Master mused.
We may have to hurry her into the embrace of her goddess.
Mugabe shrugged. He turned to go.
Anyone else you want to see alone?
Howler. Wait.
What?
Where is the Lance of Passion?
Wherever Kruka is, I imagine. Or the Standard Bearer. But still that serpent Mergen, I believe.
I love you too, Mugabe.
We must take possession. Might that not be a task for the deceivers? Even destroying the Black Company may not be enough in the long run. And one other thing for the deceivers. Have them find out why Senjak wants all that bamboo.
Bamboo? Was there an echo?
She has been stripping the Taglian territories for months. Wherever her soldiers go, they loot bamboo.
That is curious. I will find out.
I followed Mugabe for a moment. Once he was clear of the parapet, he muttered,
"Bamboo. I have to humor a lunatic."
I tried to travel south of Overlook. Smoke went only a short way before he balked. Well, I would find out sooner than I wanted, I supposed. After we settled Long Shadow and Overlook, the plane was next on the list of obstacles blocking our path to Katovar.
Chapter 52.
I returned to the chamber with Smoke and our stinky pet strangler. I was hungry and thirsty, but also so excited I shook. I hadn't uncovered much of resounding import, but gods, the potential. I drank from the pitcher, cleared my throat, lifted the corner of the cloth covering the prisoner. You in there? Want a drink? Want to tell me? He was asleep. Be that way. So what now? Help hadn't arrived. I gnawed on one of Mother Goda's stones. That eased my hunger. That was all I wanted at the moment. What now? Keep going out until somebody came to reclaim me? See Lady? Look for Goblin? Hunt for Blade? How about finding out where Soulcatcher was hiding? She had to be out there somewhere, though we hadn't stubbed our toes in her lately. No place was free of crows if a member of the company was around. Soulcatcher is patient. That's her scariest trait. It was Kid in the Candy Shop time. I decided to look for Soulcatcher. She was the oldest mystery going right now. Smoke jumped right out, but then he stalled. His soul, or Ka, or whatever, became more agitated as I grew more insistent. All right! She always was more trouble than I wanted to deal with anyway. Let's find her goofy sister. Lady didn't intimidate Smoke at all. I found her in the citadel at Dejagore, in the conference chamber with four men leaning over a map. The frontier markings on the map lay far south of Dejagore. Earlier boundaries were noted and identified by date. She needed a new map. Her old one was too busy. She had won too many skirmishes. Lady is a beauty, even fresh from the field. She looks way too young for Croaker, although she is far older than One Eye. One Eye never mastered any youth sorcery. Two of Lady's companions were company men. Geazli Nar, anxious to show the world that Mugaba and his traitors were mutants. That their like wouldn't be seen again. I didn't buy that. Neither did Lady or the old man. We were confident that Mugaba had left somebody behind. Croaker once told me, watch out for somebody to start pointing fingers. That'll be the traitor. A third man was the Prabhrindra Dra, the ruling prince of Taglios. He was about as nondescript for a Taglian as a man could be and still be breathing. He put in the last 4 years learning the arts of war. He commanded a full division now, the right wing of the field army. Lady and the old man took pains to entangle him deeply in their war machine, so he had a personal stake to maintain there. The last man was the improbable Willow Swan. When I focused on him, Smoke became agitated, which proved to me Smoke's self was partially aware on some plane. He and Swan had gotten on like rats and mice. These days, Swan's the captain of the Royal Guards detachment assigned to Dejagore. Swan wears his corn-silk hair longer than Lady does her shoulder-length black hair. Sometimes Willow braids his, but at the moment it was pulled back into a ponytail. Lady's hair was back in a tail, too. Usually she lets it hang free. She did keep it combed and clean when she could. A soldier, by accident, Swan didn't want to be a hero. His guards existed outside the army and functioned mainly as military police. He and they owed their allegiance directly to the prince and his sister. Lady said, Howler has quit attacking outposts. You said he ain't stupid, Swan replied. I got too close when I missed him. That scared him off for good. One of the Gnar observed,
Our raids must trouble them.
They trouble me, I see, and I authorized them.
Lady shivered momentarily. They are effective.
Beyond doubt.
The prince asked, But would the Liberator approve? Lady's smile revealed glistening white teeth that were almost too perfect. She had mastered the cosmetic sorceries early.
He doesn't approve. Definitely. But he won't interfere. I'm the one who is here, and I'm relying on my own experience.
The prince asked, Will Long Shadow unleash Mogapa? The Nar brigadiers tensed. Mogapa shamed them greatly. By letting pride and vanity seduce him away from the ancient ideals of the Nar. Not to mention, he was going to be blue-assed hell in a fight. Swan asked, You take any prisoners down there?
Yes.
And what they knew would fit into a thimble with room left for a stork's nest. Nobody responsible down there ever sits around the campfire swapping secrets with the troops. Swan stared at her while her gaze was directed elsewhere. He saw a woman 5.5 feet tall, blue-eyed, 110 perfectly arranged pounds. She was big for this part of the world. She looked like she might turn 20 soon. That old black magic. Swan was transparent. Lady is cold and hard and committed and deadlier than a sword with a will of its own, but these guys just can't seem to help themselves. It started with the old man way back, but the parade goes on. The fever cost Blade big. Despite what may have happened with Blade, I'm convinced that Lady is the captain's woman, absolutely. Whatever happened, Croker took it to heart. He drove a good man over to the enemy and became something as cold as Lady himself. Half the time anymore, Croker is this living war god, so fierce that when he barks, even the prince and the Radishah jump. Aloud, Lady wondered what Howler's raids were meant to accomplish. Swan blurted Bucket's answer. He wanted to pick off Black Company guys. That's obvious.
I see, Lady asked. Is there more?
One of the Nar replied, Mogapa wouldn't test himself against lesser men. Long Shadow might want to remove those so he can better manipulate Mogapa's obsessions. Or he might be trying to initiate the final battle by being a continuous irritant. The prince nodded to himself. Now he was watching Lady.